You know what earworms are, right? Those catchy tunes that get stuck in your head. Well, the ones that get to me have not just a musical hook, they also have a scientific one. And I totally love to sing them in the shower. Join me. No, not in the shower, but in my chat with the creator of Acapella Science on YouTube, Tim Blaze. It's all new and all blue next. Our guest today is Tim Blaze. He's the talented creator of the YouTube channel Acapella Science. On it, he parodies well-known songs from rock artists like Queen, Billy Joel, and Broadway shows like Wicked and Hamilton, and even Disney movies. They're complex musically, but also deliver a powerful dose of scientific content in a really fun and entertaining way. Tim joins us via Skype from his studio in Montreal, Canada. Tim, welcome.
Wow, thanks for having me on.
Okay, what came first, the science or the music with you?
It's really hard to say because both of them have kind of been part of me from a very, very young age. Probably the music. I grew up surrounded by music. My dad is one of these people who can just sit down at a piano and play it for an hour without, you know, actually having anything in front of him. I was part of a choir from the time I was 3 years old because my mom ran a choir at our church. But at the same time, I was introduced to Bill Nye the Science Guy at about the age of 3 as well, and I kind of grew up on that. So I feel like, you know, both of these parts of me have been, they've been born up from a very young age to adulthood, and I just kept both of them, and I never really decided on which one I wanted to do. Like, I went into science because, you know, that's what you do to get a job, but I didn't really suppress one or elevate the other. I was doing music all of my free time when I was studying science, and eventually I just decided, you know what, these would probably go well together. I think I can make this work. So I don't know, I gave it a shot.
And briefly tell us about your science background.
So I was a really science nerdy kid. I was homeschooled, and I like I said, I went right through Bill Nye the Science Guy, and I started reading these, you know, these kids' science books, and then I got into, you know, the Hawking physics books and the more technical but not quite entirely mathy books for public consumption. And then when it was time for university, I went to McGill University and I did an honors undergraduate in physics there. And then I stayed on at McGill under this professor named Alexander Maloney doing high energy theoretical physics. So string theory and quantum gravity and weird universes with strange geometries and other dimensions. And it was in that context that I decided to start turning some of my very technical stuff into music. I think just because I couldn't handle doing nothing but focusing on these intense math problems all day. After about 3 hours, your brain kind of burns out. Or at least it did for me. Maybe there are people who can just go for, you know, 10, 12 hours. But for me, after about hour 3, I'm pretty much done reading an intense physics paper. And so once that was done, I would sort of daydream. And eventually I started doodling song lyrics and things into the notes of my string theory classes and stuff. But yeah, high energy theory is my technical background.
Well, I'm a huge fan of your channel. In fact, I just got back from the doctor and found out I need to lose 20 pounds. So rim shot there.
All right.
I want you to know that what I really most like about your videos is they're entertaining for sure and moving. And I have some favorites I want to ask you about in a bit. But I'd really like to know how you came to this idea of creating musical parodies with not just a little scientific theme, but very sophisticated science in them.
Well, I think it started out, it was sophisticated science because that was what I was doing at the time. It just sort of flowed naturally that these really technical things that I was filling my brain with all day, that's what was going to come out of me. But the inspiration for that, I think it was twofold. Number one, it was Bill Nye the Science Guy, again, because at the end of each one of his episodes on PBS, he would have a song parody.
Right.
And often what it was that everything that couldn't be fit into sort of the simple message that he would sort of hammer home for his 20-minute segment, he would put that sort of, like, the technical jargon and all the interesting terms, he'd sprinkle it throughout these song parodies. So it was kind of a taste of, oh, that's another thing that's a whole different way to look at that then I could go and look up. And so I actually did look up some of those things, and a lot of those songs, I only know the Bill Nye versions now. I don't even know the originals. But that always sort of stuck with me. And then there was this a cappella group on YouTube when I was starting this in 2012. They were called the Maccabeats. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they did the same thing, but for Jewish holidays and like the Jewish religion. And it was fascinating to see, because my friends and I got sort of addicted to the Maccabeats for a little while. And it was fascinating to see all of us singing these songs about Jewish holidays and like quoting lines in Hebrew that we didn't know what they meant. But just because there was such a fun energy to it, and they obviously had a passion for it, you know, we got interested in this whole new thing that there was no way we would have ever known about before. And so I was thinking about science, and I was thinking about how I was going to transition to trying to be something of an artist, because that's something that I wanted to do once I had gotten out of university. I wanted to at least give it a shot to be the artist type. And that just sort of hit me, like if I can be gotten to enjoy a song about, you know, Hebrew people 2000 years ago and be interested in that because of it, I could probably do the same thing for people, for science. So I don't know, I gave it a shot. I didn't really know if it would work, but 5 years later, I'm still doing it. So something worked, right?
Yeah. You know, Bill Nye, when you mentioned that, a song popped into my head from the episode they did on the Rock Cycle. We rock hard, but rocks rock harder. And I can see the guys just pounding the drums and pushing that boulder up the hill.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of them. One of the ones that stuck in my head for a long time was they did Aretha Franklin, Respect. And I will always hear that song as R-E-C-Y-C-L-E every time that they do it. It was their song about recycling.
Yeah.
And it took me about 5 years before I learned that was actually a song that existed.
Oh, that's funny. Well, the first time I heard one of yours, I had the same experience. So we'll talk about that later. Let's talk about the method to your madness. How do you go about creating these pieces? Describe for somebody who's never seen one of your videos what they look like, because they're pretty amazing with you all over the place.
Right. Well, the videos have changed in format a little over the years. They've gotten a little more visually intense, I guess. But the main thing that I'm doing is that I'm trying to give you a good multi-track a cappella video, like a good representation of music in a cappella form. So it's an entire song done a cappella. It's just me and my mouth and sometimes my hands. And so I'm representing that in the video, because the way that my brain interprets music is that it breaks it down into its fundamental parts. Like every note is in there in my head. I can sort of take it all apart and put it back together. So what I'm doing with the music is I'm really trying to represent that to other people and give them something like that experience. But then at the same time, the lyrics, I generally take the lyrics of a popular song or a classic song or something like that, and I'll convert them into a lesson on some form of science. So whether it's the Higgs boson discovery, or whether it's birds are actually dinosaurs, or gene editing technology, I'll take whatever works with the structure of the song. And it's a pretty long process often just to find a match like that that'll work well. But once I do, I try to represent that as well as I can visually too. And I'm trying to get better at using the video medium to fill in the gaps as well of what I can't do lyrically. So it's sort of an overall experience, I guess, that if you take in all the information from your ears and your eyes, hopefully you'll get some semblance of what I'm trying to convey in 4 minutes.
I mentioned earlier they're very sophisticated in their content. They remind me of the old Looney Tunes cartoons, because like you could watch those as a child and, you know, enjoy them on that level. But if you were an adult, there were a lot of jokes in there and things that, you know, you would get that a kid would never get. And your videos are like that, because if you really have a depth of understanding about the science, you get a whole nother level of enjoyment with your videos.
Yeah, that's an aesthetic that I really enjoy. Like my example of that has often been The Little Mermaid, because I remember I watched that probably when I was 2 years old, I watched that for the first time, and it was one thing. And then I watched it again as an adult, and it was this completely different experience. Pixar movies often have the same sort of multifaceted thing to them. But I think that's the most important things about a lot of really fundamental concepts are not, they're not in the math. If you only understand science at the level of the math, you don't really understand it. I think it was Einstein who said that if you can't teach something to a five-year-old, you don't really understand it. So what I'm challenging myself to do, I guess, is to always have in place that nugget, that piece of the puzzle that will fit into your brain, even if you're 5 years old, even if you don't have any other experience of science. Like, it's a core concept that's simple and precise and can fit in. And then there's all the hullabaloo of equations and fancy terms for, you know, the people who are studying this stuff for a living, peppered in there too. So I try to make it kind of harmonious, to use a pun, on all of those different levels, that whatever level you're coming to it at, that's the level you receive it at.
And I think that's why I love them. Can I just ask you about a couple of my personal favorites?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
It's kind of a tie. I have two absolute favorites, although I enjoy many of your videos. They're all great. But I love the Wicked parody you did of Defying Gravity with Diana Cowern, better known as Physics Girl, and Melinda Kathleen Reese. You know, if I'd learned about Einstein and Newton's quest to understand gravity that way as a teenager, I think that would have gotten me to Caltech.
Yeah, that was a really fun one to do. I was a big fan of both of those women before actually contacting them, but Diana reached out to me at some point, and we actually had a good long conversation about how to do physics on YouTube and all sorts of things long before we actually did that. So I was really grateful to her. And in the course of that conversation, I found out that she had been in an a cappella group at MIT. And I was like, wow, my goodness. Okay. Please, can we do something together? And then Melinda, of course, is just hilarious. And she had her way with facial expressions, like her social intelligence, the way she can communicate in an instant, this gigantic emotional range is something that I frankly am very jealous of, because my social intelligence is more on the level of what you'd expect from a physicist, I guess. So to watch her work and to watch both of them bring these lyrics that I had written and this arrangement that I had written to life, that actually, I think that makes it one of my favorite videos as well, because I can step outside of it, and it's not just this thing that I've created, it's this collaboration that I can really see how they've taken their own voices and put it onto what's a very goofy song. It's about, you know, Einstein and Newton singing lyrics that were originally for Broadway witches. Like, it's such a strange 21st century mashup of concepts, but they bring a heart to it, and it really makes it work, I think.
Oh, it's beautiful. And they both have such... I was blown away by Diana's voice. I knew she was talented, but had no idea she could sing like that. And she plays Newton, Isaac yeah. Newton, and Melinda plays Albert Einstein.
Yeah, so it's the video is Defying Gravity, based on the Wicked song Defying Gravity, so it was a very clear pun. I wasn't even the first person to come up with that pun, I found out later, but I reached out to the other science YouTuber who had done a similar thing, and we actually ended up doing a thing together as well, so it was a very collaborative experience.
That is cool. My other favorite is your wonderful take on exoplanets and the history of their discovery based on the music from Aladdin. Tell me about the collaborators on that one, because that's just a spectacular collaboration.
Oh man, that video was a long time being put together. I started that probably March of 2014, I think, working on that particular video. So it went through a lot of rewrites and a lot of stages and a lot of different potential collaborators, actually. But I couldn't be happier with the people that ended up being on it. So the first person that you'll see, well, they all appear in the intro, but the first person you'll see is Julien Neal, who has this a cappella channel called Treadbowl, which is very It's another a cappella channel, but it's very simple. He's a one-man barbershop quartet, and he has this rich, sonorous voice that just blends extremely well, and it has this harmonic tone that I don't understand how he gets it. Maybe he's just born with it. But I love him, and I love his expressiveness. Sam Robson, who's the second person who appears, who plays this sort of reporter. Julien plays the reporter. Sam Robson plays a scientist working on the Kepler mission. And Sam Robson is what I think my favorite musical YouTuber. Maybe Jacob Collier comes close, but Sam Robson, his a cappella arrangements are just, they blow me out of the water every time that sense that you get when you see something or you hear something and you just get goosebumps all over, and you sort mm-hmm. of, you just have to laugh at it. Like, it's not funny, but you have to laugh at how it hits you and all the different emotions it's hitting you. Sam Robson does that to me every time I hear anything he does. And so to get him on one of my videos was definitely a dream come true. And then finally, Gia Mora, who's my duet partner for the final song when we sing Whole New Worlds, she reached out to me originally on Twitter because she's part of this these three women in science and entertainment called the Sirens with an SC. And I listened to some of her stuff, and she did this one woman show called Einstein's Girl, which was a musical. It was like a one woman physics musical, and you can go on giamora.com, I think, and you can listen to the tracks on it. And her voice is just like, it's that sort of jazzy yet musical theater quality to it. It mm-hmm. rings like a bell, and it's just, it's beautiful. And so them too, they all, I wanted them to be very free with their take on it too. So, I said, take it in whatever direction you want and do your own thing. And I'm just fans of all of them. So I knew it was going to be great. And they came back, and it really was.
It really is a lot of fun. And it's also a wonderful history of the discovery of planets beyond our solar system.
Yeah. And it's a history that I wasn't aware of it before I started looking into this, especially the fact that it was so new, this idea that there are planets around pretty much every star and multiple planets around every star. And also that there's such a variability. Like, I didn't realize that up until the mid-90s, we just sort of presumed that every solar system was like ours, that there were the rocky planets in the interior and the gas giants outside, and they had these very mathematically defined orbits, and this is just the way it has to be. And what we've found in the past 30 years or so is that the universe is working with a much larger set of recipes for solar systems than we could have imagined. So there are giant planets orbiting, every 4 days, really zooming around extremely tightly around their stars, and there are planets in crazy orbits that go way out and then circle extremely close to one side of their star. So they dip from 300 degrees above to 100 degrees below Celsius. And there's just this gigantic dynamic range that gives you this huge playground to experiment with how can planets be, and how could our planet potentially be, and how could our solar system evolve. And we didn't know this 20 years ago, and people even thought it was kind of ridiculous to even go looking for planets. A lot of these early scientists were sort of ridiculed for trying to find planets around other stars. So the fact that it's come so far and now it's this mainstream ongoing revolution is incredible. And I really wanted to tell that story.
And it does it quite well. And I hate to give away the ending, but I will anyway. We had the discovery of the TRAPPIST-1 planets, the mm-hmm. Earth-like planets that I did a show on just recently, it's just an amazing discovery. And you were able to include that at the end.
Well, I managed to include it in essentially the last frame because having worked on this for 3 years, I'd become used to updating the song every time a new discovery came out, and I realized, oh no, I need to rewrite that whole section. Because like I said, there's just this ongoing revolution. Like every few months, there's a new major discovery in this field. So it's a hazard with working on present day material. You end up having to rewrite a lot. And the TRAPPIST-1 discovery came out the week before I was planning to release my video, and it was almost done. And I thought, well, I can't rewrite the whole thing now, but I can at least give it an homage. So there's a little flash at the end.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Tim Blaze, the content provider for the YouTube channel Acapella Science. Stay with us. And we're back. You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Tim Blaze, the content provider of the YouTube channel Acapella Science. Okay, those are my two favorites. What about yours? Do you have any that you particularly enjoyed doing or are proud of?
I think the two that I'm most proud of right now, well, maybe three. So the one that really blew up the channel, and I still consider, I don't know if I've had an idea better than it, is Bohemian Gravity. And I'm really proud of that for two reasons. Number one, because it was sort of the entire body of research that I had been learning in my actual research, in my master's thesis. It was these really intense string theory courses synthesized down to the song form. So just that I was able to do that, I was very proud of. And just Bohemian Rhapsody is one of the great songs of all time. And so to pull that apart and put it back together and be able to express it on screen, it's just a wonderful song to be able to work with. So that one was great. Recently, about this time last year, I did one called Entropic Time, which was based on the idea that it's very strange, in fact, that time has a direction. You wouldn't expect from the laws of physics that time has a direction. There's this notion of time symmetry, where time actually looks the same going backwards and forwards if you look at the fundamental laws of physics. So it's a very strange idea that time only goes forward, for example. And so the reason why that is because things tend to go from order to chaos. So it's very hard to take a chaotic system and have it randomly generate some sort of structure, but structured systems sort of naturally fall into chaos. And so the beginning of the universe happened to be a very structured system, and it's been devolving into chaos ever since. And it's that step from structure to chaos that actually gives time its arrow. That's why we can remember the past, but we can't remember the future, for example. The reason why I'm very proud of that one is that the way we did it was we actually filmed the entire thing backwards. So I learned the entire song in reverse with all the phonemes backwards. And then we filmed it in a series of one takes where I do all sorts of impossible things like eat a banana backwards and unlight a pack of matches. And there's a lot of really cool visuals there that I think really, that's my best visual storytelling, I think, the ability to drive that point home of just how strange this phenomenon actually is.
And that one's a take on the Billy Joel song.
Yeah, that's For the Longest Time by Billy Joel. So it's also one of the classic a cappella songs. I think it worked really well.
Another excellent one. They're all great, Tim. You do a wonderful job. How do you go about deciding the level of science content in these videos? Because it seems to me you set the bar pretty high for the viewers to say, hey, here's some really cool science history here and science content. Come on along for the ride. And if you don't understand it all, then, let's learn more.
Well, the reality of my day-to-day is that I'm going to be working on these videos for probably somewhere between 1 and 3 months, depending on how long the process is. It's a very long process. So if I'm not presenting this stuff at a level where I'm going to be engaged and entertained, there's no way I'm going to survive it. I'm going to get fed up within a couple of weeks. And I've tried that a couple of times, and it's a real slog. If I'm not doing something that's really engaging to me, it's just 10 times more difficult to actually get it going. So what I try to do with the sort of the Disney model, right? You present the simple things well, if you can, as simply and as clearly as you can, but also you have this hierarchy of complexity where any level that someone wants to go to, they can understand you at that level. And then you can tease people to higher levels. So if someone understands it at a high school level, they'll hear a bunch of, you know, words that now with the availability of Google and various search engines and Wikipedia, you can go and find out these things for yourself. And probably YouTube's good enough now that in the sidebar there will be many explanations of what are these concepts that were only alluded to in my song. So it's sort of an invitation to people to, you know, come along and learn what they can.
It reminds me of a recent, well, not too recent, but Stephen Colbert show when he has Brian Greene, the physicist, on. And he says to Brian, it's like, you know, everybody always wants you scientists to dumb it down to the level of a fifth grader. I want you to give it to me, you know, as if I, you know, really understand this stuff. And he explains general relativity in like 2 minutes with, you know, all the great terminology. And it's just hilarious. It's great.
Yeah, it is absurd. Like there's an absurd element to the technical aspects of science, which I think is the other reason why my Bohemian Gravity video was so popular and did so well and kind of launched the channel, because there's, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, there's this innate silliness to it. Like it seems really profound and serious some of the time, and then sometimes it just goes off the rails with, you know, 50 Freddie Mercury's everywhere and it's just ludicrous and they're singing Galileo, Figaro, Magnifico. It doesn't make any sense, but you love that, the fact that there's something great here and there's also something goofy. And I think science is sort of like that. Like the greatest technological advances of mankind have come through science, but also when you start talking about it, it's a little bit silly and you sort of have to laugh at yourself. So I try to bring that in and allow scientists to not take themselves too seriously either.
What do you hope viewers will take away from watching your videos?
I make these videos as an expression of myself, as an expression of what I'm interested in, an expression of what I'm curious about, whether that's the science or in the music too, because I'm always trying to innovate with what can you do with a cappella. And I'm almost not shooting for a niche or for a particular reaction. I'm just making things that feel meaningful to me. And I think when you do that, there's a shared sense of what is meaningful in human nature, that people look at it and they agree with you and they pull out whatever information there is there to get.
Well, Tim Blaze, good luck and thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks to Tim Blaze, the content provider, musician, and scientific educator behind Acapella Science on YouTube. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. You can listen to this and past episodes on mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Schlom. Our program is engineered by a guy who can perform a cappella and he plays well with others, Nolan Ford. He and I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.